Hello, Patrick Stack here. We've got a little bonus for you this weekend. I know you don't normally get anything in the feed from a Saturday or Sunday, but I got to tell you about this new podcast. It's called ABC AFL Daily. It's like Sport Daily, but AFL specific. It's hosted by Catherine Murphy and a guy called Paul Roos. You may have heard of him. Played 350-odd AFL, VFL games for Fitzroy and the Sydney Swans. Won a premiership with the Sydney Swans as a coach in 2005. You're right, that was a historic, drought-breaking 70-plus year premiership. He then went on to coach the Melbourne Football Club before handing the reins over to Simon Goodwin, who helped the Demons break a historic drought. Success kind of follows the guy. They're giving you a footy conversation every day of the week that goes well beyond the headlines, bringing you context and insights you're just not going to get anywhere else. It's called ABC AFL Daily. Here's a taste of Friday's episode. I think you're going to enjoy.
This is an ABC podcast.
Welcome to the ABC AFL Daily podcast. I'm Catherine Murphy and my co-host is seven-time All-Australian and Premiership coach Paul Roos. On today's show, a draw at the G. Players want extra time, but the coaches, not so much. The Toby Greenless Giants dominate in the capital and Roosie's using vocabulary on the podcast that I don't understand. And it's only week one.
High bomb to centre half forward, more to saving mark. And after three decades, we're back where we started. It's a draw on Anzac Day.
Roosey, what a match at the MCG. Players, fans, not quite sure how to feel after the final siren. And we will get to the debate about extra time. But in the words of Corbin Middlemass, who did such a great job calling that match, as you just heard, who won the draw and who lost the draw?
I don't think we'll know until the end of the year. And the reason I say that is because the draw is worth 2 points, which effectively means you've got a really good percentage. And we know at the end of the year, percentage makes a big difference. So let's say both teams are on, you know, 13 wins and percentage comes into it. Both of these teams have got an extra 2 points. So that does make a difference. And I know, again, we're going to get into the realities of the draw, but there is a 2 points, which effectively means your percentage is not going to come into play against the teams on the same wins as you. You're going to beat them, of course, unless Collingwood and Essendon, yeah, finish on the same point. So there is an advantage to picking up the 2 points, there's no question. From a psychological point of view, it's funny because I was watching the game and I was sort of thinking, yeah, exactly that. Psychologically, who? Because sometimes a team comes back and gets the draw and they go, yes, we've sort of got a draw. The other team gets a bit flat. I think both teams had chances to win. And I think that probably added to, yeah, Langford had the shot at goal, then Elliott dropped the chest mark. And I think because of that, there's probably disappointment in both camps because of the way both teams would have thought we were a chance to win. So, which is somewhat unusual, even in a draw.
Now, I put it to you that because of the chances that were involved, I say that Collingwood lost this draw, Paul, because if you think about it, before Jamie Elliott dropped that mark, let's just put that into perspective. The guy took the mark of the year so far. It was stunning. And I love that on the coverage, they gave credit to the photographer, Michael Klein, who took great images of it. And I love when photographers get that credit because they are the iconic moments that we look at for years. So Jamie Elliott takes the mark of the year. We cannot possibly expect him to also take this incredible mark in the dying moments and remember that he would have had to convert the goal after taking the mark. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you mentioned Kyle Langford. But what about Brody Majacek? Now, he had two set shots in front of goal, they weren't easy, but to put both of them out on the full, so not even to get a point for a behind, I was feeling so bad for him, Roosie, because, and I feel wrong saying this, to barrack for a Collingwood player when you're not a Pies fan, but when he stood up to take the second shot, my heart was in my mouth. I could not watch him go for it, and he misses, and you see his reaction to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Yeah, when you get to a draw, you dissect the game to the nth degree, as the coaches will. But I think I thought when Kyle Langford marked the ball, I thought he's such a beautiful kick. I sort of thought sitting at home, look, well, he's going to put them in front. Will there be enough time for Collingwood? And there still was. So it wasn't like if Kyle Langford had to kick the goal, Collingwood would no chance. There was still enough time because when you go back to the centre bounce, it's 6-6-6. You get a clearance, you get a shot at goal. So I think you dissect it, but let's look at the overview of the game. And I think we said before the game, Collingwood know they can win. So it doesn't really affect them. So it's a win in a sense for them. They went to a big game. They were 6-1 down. They came back and they drew. The question mark was on the Bombers. And I think some of those questions were answered yesterday. I think the fact that they played in a big game, I thought they stood up really well in big moments. Collingwood got the momentum, but they wrestled it back. So I think there's a win for both teams in the game. Craig McRae knows his team is back on track, not playing the best football, but they've righted the ship. And I think for Scotty, it's like, yeah, I reckon that's a tick for us as well. So philosophically, they'll dissect everything that you've just dissected and said, well, we should have won. But I think philosophically, both coaches will go, yeah, that's a mini win for us.
Okay, so both coaches get a mini win. And it's funny you should say that because that's what they were saying after the match. Because inevitably now, the talk, the debate is, it's on again. Should there be extra time? And it was really funny to hear the players have a very different response to the coaches. And then some of the vision of the fans who just looked so confused. They were riding this high. They don't get a win or a loss. The only two fans that I saw in the crowd on the coverage that looked relieved were that footy couple. You know, the mixed footy couple. How could they do it? There's a Bombers fan is with a Collingwood fan. They looked relieved and hugged and they looked a bit confused. Now, I have a friend. She's a Cats fan. She's dating a Collingwood fan. So she has better taste than her partner, clearly. They call the round where Collingwood play the Cats breakup round. So this couple at the G yesterday are just glad it didn't become breakup round. But so many different views on this, from the fans to the coaches to the players. So straight after, Scott Pendlebury did an interview on the field and he said he wanted extra time. The coaches differ. Here's what Brad Scott had to say.
I don't have a strong view. I can sort of make an argument for and against. I mean, I think the game comes back to the fans.
There you have it. It does come back to the fans, Rosie. So I'm here on behalf of the fans. And I will say, you coaches are all the same. You just don't want the 10 minutes extra stress or maybe the two periods of 10 minutes of extra stress. Is that a fair call?
That's a good question. If I was in a similar position, I think I have been before. I think both coaches know there's 2 points. So at the end of the day, there is something that they do get from it. And I think that's probably the reaction you get from Brad is, well, I'm not wedded either way because I know we've actually got 2 points. So there is a win from it. The fans, I love the vision as you talked about. I think those two were going, oh, great, we can go out to dinner together tonight. So they were then starting to make dinner plans. So that was awesome. The players are competitive. You know, they want to win or a loss. But I think Brad was sort of echoing my, if I'm sitting in the box after, I'm going, okay, guys, we haven't lost and we've picked up 2 points. So in effect, we have something out of it. Interesting you mentioned the fans. There was a poll today and I don't normally click on it, but it said, if you want extra time, say yes. If you want not extra time, say no. So I just clicked on one of them just to see. 87% of the fans said they didn't want extra time, which was fascinating. 87% in the survey. And at that stage, it was about 1,050 people had responded. 87% said no extra time.
What is the sample size and were the coaches conducting this survey? Because I just feel like, Rosie, you're pushing the coaches' angle. Every fan I talk to wants a win or a loss other than the couple that wanted dinner plans, that didn't want tears at bedtime. I completely get that, Rosie. But I don't know, on such a big day, how can you leave the ground with that weird kind of vibe? And you mentioned that you've been involved in coaching draws. I think you've coached 2 draws. So you walked away happy. But do you remember how your players felt at the time?
Well, I think I think after the game, if the coach is happy, the players are happy. Generally. So on the field, they haven't spoken to the coaches yet. So I think Scotty's right. On the field, you want to keep, and if, as a player, you want to keep battling and you want to win. But I think you also want to get the vibe of the coach. So I think when the players come in and they realise the coach is happy, then they realise they're in for a happy week. So I was actually shocked, as you said. I was shocked by when it was a Herald Sun website. So I went on it and clicked on it. I was staggered that it was 87% to 13%. I expected it to be the other way around. So I think, and then I sort of think to myself, maybe when you're at the game, you want the result. But then when you think about it, take your neutral hat off, you go, actually, I really enjoyed that game, watching that draw the other day or watching that. Grand final's completely different. We've sorted that out. But I was staggered that it was 87% wanted to keep the draw and only 13% wanted extra time.
Okay, well, that result stands for now. Rosie, you mentioned a really funny detail there. The players are happy if the coach is happy. This is so true. Craig McRae was actually quoted last night saying, I give the players permission to be positive right now. And that just blew my mind that, like you say, players are walking off the field wondering, how does the coach feel about our performance? And the power, Rosie, you can just ruin the weekend for these guys.
Yeah, well, when it's funny because I talk about leaders when I do my work now based on the footy experience. And I wrote down 25 leadership points when I retired as a player. And what I talk about is, are you giving energy to the room or are you sucking it out of the room as a leader? And I remember when I walked in on Mondays, you know, or yeah, when we were training at night, I would look at the coach. Is the coach happy or not happy? Yeah, so it's fascinating. And I was really mindful, probably more so at Melbourne, because obviously going to a struggling team, you know, the players are already scarred from losing. Yeah, you have to turn up relatively positive. Doesn't mean you can't give messages to improve the team and all that. But Monday morning, they're all watching the coach. Every single person's watching the coach. Yeah, is he happy? Is he grumpy? Et cetera, et cetera. So it's a funny way he puts it. I talk about energy givers or energy. Are you sucking energy out of the room? Or the player's like, oh, here comes Rosie. I can't get out of here quick enough. Or, geez, great, here comes Rosie. This is fantastic. You've got to be really mindful of it because it is a long season. We can be really reactive. Particularly, you know, when you're reading media articles, you've got emotional boards, emotional CEOs, emotional chairman, emotional fans. And the role really of the coach is to try and stay non-emotional in an incredibly emotional environment.
It's a tough gig. Before we move on, I do want to say the one positive of last night's draw was on the TV coverage, as they had to go straight to the news, Rosie, on the ABC Listen app. If you go and just press that AFL button, you got to hear the speeches afterwards, which it was awkward for Beck Madden, who's an amazing presenter, and suddenly she's saying, we actually have to go to the two captains now because there is no winner. Darcy Moore, he spoke so well. They had Nick Dacos on the coverage straight after. So when the TV coverage goes straight to the news, press the AFL button to hear all of the action after the game and all the reaction. Well, that wasn't the only match of the day. What an Anzac day it was. GWS, what a performance over the Brisbane Lions, winning by 54 points. What is going on with the Lions?
Yeah, I sort of put my coach's hat on for this game because I've been watching the Giants really closely and we've all been watching the Lions, and really different, really different. Who do you want to start with? And I'll put my coaching hat on. Which team?
Let's start and give credit to GWS before we move on.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, I'm looking at, are we sacrificing ourselves and are we all playing our role? And I'm not just talking, you know, one game. And I think what Adam Kingsley's got now is what every coach is looking for. He's got buy-in in a system and he's got buy-in from his players. There, and even last week's loss, I watched them against Carlton. So this is a trend. This is not just on the back of one game. He'd be super excited what he's seeing. They're in sync. They are playing as a team. They're sacrificing. And I'm also going to give some credit to Leon Cameron here because he went through the difficult period of having all these stars. Now, it sounds silly, but he had all these stars and first-round draft picks. And a lot of them didn't want to play for the team. A lot of them just wanted to play for themselves. And that's why you know, they did make one grand final, but that was why they were largely unsuccessful, because Leon tried to shape this team on the back of so many superstars. And through that process, what Adam's inherited now is a lot of players that want to win, want to be successful. The older players are sick of not being successful. The players that are selfish are no longer at the footy club. And Leon's done a lot of work in moulding that team. And Adam's done a great job at picking up that team and great game style. And their patience, their calmness with the ball. And they've got some great players still. Let's be perfectly frank. But you see Lachie Whitfield get the ball. His calmness under pressure. Yeah, when the opposition gets the ball, they're all in the right place at the right time. So he's got his team where he wants them. The challenge now is to keep that going and keep getting better and better and better. Love their game style. Love what they're doing. Huge tick for Adam Kingsley, the Giants, and a nice tick for Leon Cameron for setting up that team. Let's go to the Lions. They look the opposite. Had enough, too hard, not interested anymore to play for each other. So you've got a coach that would be really worried now. Done an amazing job getting to the finals, top four, I think, the last 4 years, finals, grand final. But, and I've been through it as a coach. He'd be really worried, really, really worried. Lazy on defense. Their two brilliant forwards aren't buying in anymore. Individual acts are keeping them in the game. They've got enough talent to be able to do that, but they're going down the slippery slope. Chris has got to find a way to get buy-in again from the players that look like they're just disinterested to play as a team. And now it's all about me and what can I get out of it? And that's a really concerning for Chris Fagan.
How does he get them to buy in again? Can he turn it around?
You can, absolutely. You know, I remember, ironically, it was 2005, about round 5 or 6 against the Eagles. And we were in this position. Yeah, we were just selfish football, all playing for ourselves. And I gave a spray after the game, but it wasn't really a spray. It was just a fact. I said, guys, we no longer want to play for each other. But then to the credit of the Swans, they made the decision to reconnect. This is about the decision the Brisbane Lions players want to make. Do they still want to play for each other? Do they still want to try and play for a premiership? It's hard work. And a lot of it is being selfless. But what I'm seeing, particularly from some of their star players or so-called star players, is garbage, is absolute garbage. They can do it, but this is not about Chris Fagan now. This is about the players saying, we want to get back to the mountain, and they're perfectly capable of doing it, but at the moment, it's just not happening.
Which star players are you least impressed with? Which of their big names are being most selfish?
Well, if I look at the Charlie Cameron and Joey Danaher, I mean, their efforts defensively, you know, are terrible. You know, now they've always been a bit questionable, but I look at them and I think if you put Brodie Mychek and Jamie Elliott in that team and simply took out Joe Danaher and Charlie Cameron, that's a different team again. And despite what Chris says publicly, he would know that. He would know that unless Charlie Cameron gets a goal over the back, unless... Like Joe Danaher and I'm sitting there getting super frustrated. Yeah, Jack Buckley's a good player, but honestly, Jack Buckley bodying Joe Danaher out of a contest 2 or 3 times. Jack's a laconic player. We know that. But, you know, again, his efforts, you know, the reason they're going in the forward line so often, getting so little result, is because they don't tackle in the forward line, they don't chase. And these are the benchmarks of a great team. And this is a problem that the Giants used to have. They used to have so much talent, but no real system and structure. But again, they can turn it around. But some of Joe's efforts are just, yeah, borderline embarrassing.
What would you do if you were coaching Joe?
Well, it's about what Joe wants to do. You know, like, and I haven't watched him close enough for long periods of time, but he is one of those frustrating players that he's never reached his potential. Yeah, now Chris would have had many, many conversations with him on what he wants to do. Now, the worry is Joe what he is? Is he a 5-6 goal forward against really poor teams? And then, one or two against really, really good teams. If that's the case, then you've got to put structures around him. You can't have 2 or 3 in your forward line like that. You've got to put, you know, guys around that are going to scrap and fight. And, you know, I feel for Lincoln McCarthy. He's the sort of the opposite. He's the one that's jumping and spoiling and bringing the ball to ground and chasing and tackling and, you know, but it's hard. If you've got two or three forwards that don't want to do it, it's really, really difficult.
Well, they are well and truly under the spotlight right now, Roosie. No doubt we'll talk a lot more about the Brisbane Lions, but we've got to move it on to tonight's match, Friday night's match, as Port Adelaide hosts the Saints. Now, this match is huge for the Saints after that thrashing they got at the hands of the Western Bulldogs last week. Now, Ross Lyon, Rossi 2.0, I need to ask you about that. I think Rossi's always been the same. I think he's always been cuddly. I'll ask you about that in a minute. But he was really measured and he was pointing to the fixture, and particularly in the press conference after that match, Roosie, saying, hang on, we've played three matches in 11 days. They have had an 8-day turnaround to tonight's match, but it involves more interstate travel to Adelaide. Is that long enough, that turnaround, to rejuvenate the side for what is such a tough assignment?
Yeah, I mean, the AFL done a fantastic job with the salary cap in the draft and tried to even up the competition. But the draw is just farcical, really. Like, we know it's not equitable. And so when you look at, I talk about reasons and excuses. You know, a reason why a team starts to struggle is because, you know, because of what Ross has said. You know, a team that gets a 7-day break is going to be fitter and healthier than a team that gets a 4-day break or a 5-day break. Now, two in a row, you know, traveling interstate, et cetera. So it's actually a reason. Now, it's not to say you can't overcome it. And that's why you have medical departments and fitness departments and so many meetings, et cetera, et cetera. But anyone that thinks the draw is equitable is kidding themselves. You know, like without, I mean, Collingwood don't travel. I remember it was funny. One year I was talking to assistant coaches when I was coaching. I said, yeah, there's a bye weekend and Collingwood went on a training camp on a bye weekend. I said, guys, we try and give our players the time off because we're on a flight every second week. They wanted to get together because they played, I think they played the MCG like 20 times that year. So it's not fair. That's the reality of the draw. Every single coach in the AFL would agree with that comment. So what does Ross do? He was honest and aware that going into the last game, they were tired. He would have recognized that. Yeah, equally, he would have tried to freshen them up, you know, really got them up for this game. Their injuries are starting to really hurt them, but you'll get effort tonight. You'll get effort from the Saints tonight. There's no question about that. Again, a lot of questions over Port, you know, going into this game as well. So, but I think you're going to get effort from the Saints because they've got a really good football department, a good coach. You'll get the effort, but have they got the talent to get over Port in Adelaide?
In a word, has Ross Lyon always been cuddly and you just always knew it behind the scenes, or has he really changed?
I've known Rossi since he was about 17, when he came to Fitzroy. I mean, cuddly, I laughed with Rossi when he said that. I think I rang him up. I said, mate, come on, pull up. Come on, Roosie, I'm going to be cuddly Ross. He's a great guy. The thing I mean, I'm biased towards Ross, but you know, when the players talk about their coach, when Riewoldt and DelSanto and Goddard and Fife and all this, they love him. The players love him. Yeah. And that's a really good testament. He sets really high standards, holds them accountable, but he builds really strong relationships. Have I answered your question? No, he's not cuddly. We know he's not cuddly, but he does build good relationships. He absolutely knows how to coach. I'll give him that.
Let's give him the credit for the cuddly rebrand being, you know, marginally successful. Really quickly before I let you go, Roosie, the pick of round 7, the undefeated Geelong versus Carlton. I know how impressed you are with the Cats, but I was really surprised to read that not only are they 6-0, they actually have 7 home matches in Geelong to come this season. They are primed, but this is a huge test.
Yeah, it is a good test. I mean, Carlton are playing really good football as well. What you got to love about the Cats, and we talk about system, they got a great system and they're super calm. You know, they're not a manic team. We've seen a lot of teams sort of go into that manic ball movement, you know, handball, 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 up and down. It looks like a 400-metre Olympic race, you know, a relay race. The ball just goes round and round and round in circles. You don't get that with a Geelong game. You get real calmness, you know, through your whole team. You know, they make really good decisions with the ball. They're really well-structured behind the ball. And they'll continue to do that. But Carlton can challenge them. I mean, Carlton, you know, I love the way the Blues are playing. They get a lot more pressure around the ball. They're a lot harder and tougher and physical. They've got good structure in front of the ball and behind the ball. They've got a good midfield. This is going to be a great game. Really, really good game. Can Geelong keep going? It's hard to win 7-8 games in a row. And we've seen that with the Giants last week. They bounced back. Really good game to watch.
Cannot wait to watch it. Now, before we wrap up, Roosie, it would be remiss of us not to mention that Marlon Pickett's love tap is going to cost him $3,750. Not bad at all for a love tap. He got a discount on that one. Now, that's the fine, in case any of our listeners missed it, he's getting for punching Clayton Oliver in the stomach. Now, I have a huge admission to make, Paul, about yesterday's podcast. So when we were discussing this, you said to me, he's punched him in the solar plexus. We've all been there. Now, two admissions actually from me. It's becoming a confessional on a Friday. I've never been punched in the solar plexus. So we haven't all been there, but I try really hard to be empathetic and imagine what that feels like. But the worst admission is to come. I had no idea what solar plexus meant. I was afraid to admit it, so I had to Google it in my own private time, away from the podcast. So for any of our listeners who don't know what that is, I can tell you that the solar plexus is a compilation of nerves and ganglia that is located in your abdomen, near the diaphragm, behind your aorta. But the key takeout from this is that's the sort of vocabulary Paul Roos is using on this podcast. And I don't know, I'm just going to have to improve and try and keep up with you.
Next time I go to Ireland, I'm going to do a survey. How many people know what solar maybe it's an Irish thing. I'm going to go to Dublin and find out next time I go over there.
Maybe it is. I will say, in my defence, I surveyed the newsroom and not a lot of people knew. So that made me feel better. Paul Roos, I've absolutely loved having you on this week, the first week of our ABC AFL Daily podcast. Can't wait for next week.
Great chatting. Enjoyed it. Have a good weekend.
Here's what else is making news. Port Adelaide will be without ruckman Ivan Soldo for their clash against St Kilda. He'll undergo an arthroscopy early next week, ruling him out of tonight's clash with St Kilda. Ex-Bulldog Jordan Sweet retains his spot despite being subbed out against Collingwood last week. Charlie Dixon returns to the side after being managed. St Kilda will be without key forward Max King again after he failed a fitness test. Zach Jones has been omitted. And the Western Bulldogs will be without Jamara Ugal-Hagan for a second week for personal reasons. They've also dropped top draft pick Riley Sanders. Tom Liberatore returns after completing concussion protocols. This has been the ABC AFL Daily Podcast. Join us tomorrow on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. And for all the commentary on Round 7 matches, go to the Listen app and press the AFL button.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.